KTSW San Marcos.
Coming at you live from the KTSW studios in San Marcos, Texas, this is Bobcat Radio.
And welcome to your Monday edition of Bobcat Radio here on KTSW 89.9. This is your host, Adam Byerly, here with Dominic and Monique Ainsley. If you need to contact the show today, contact us on Twitter at KTSW Sports, that is at KTSW Sports, or by phone line at 512-245-FIRE, that is 512-245-3473. Today we have a jam-packed show, as we will have two call-in guests, one at 11:10, and that is Sean Pendergast from Sports Radio 610 in Houston. He runs the Drive Time show there from 2 to 6 to talk Rockets, draft, Texans. And then at 11:30 from 105.3 The Fan in Dallas, we will have Kevin Hagelin to talk Cowboys, Rangers, Cowboys draft, etc. But we will also talk about Texas State sports on the show. But before we get going, guys, did you have a good Easter weekend?
I did. I made a long drive back to Fort Worth. You know, enjoyed some time with some family, some playoff basketball, all that good stuff.
Yeah, I did the same thing. Went back to Arlington. Got to see my nephew. You know, just got born about 2 weeks ago, so that was pretty awesome.
Yeah, and yesterday was a good day for me as my Rockets came out with the victory, and I'll be talking with Sean about the Rockets win and MVP stuff and all that kind of stuff. But let's jump into Texas State sports, as they had the spring game this Saturday, and this is what Coach Withers had to say about a question about this group of guys versus last year's group of football players.
Last year, at this time, you barely knew the guys' names, let alone you know, their talents.
Right.
You didn't have a lot of good things to
say. I didn't like those guys last year either.
Yeah.
I didn't like them.
Yeah.
Just so you know, I didn't.
You like these guys better?
Love them.
Yeah.
I mean, are we more talented? No. We're not. But I like being around them. I like being around them.
What do you take away from his comments? He was very blunt and just said, hey, I like these guys better. They're not more talented, but they work harder.
Yeah, he went on in that question too. He talked about this group of guys, he'd like to have his kids around. He'd bring his family around them. He said last year he never brought his kids around those group of guys. You know, we don't know what the true inside of the locker room and all that looked like, but we do know those weren't Everett Withers' guys. Those were Dennis Franchione's guys that he just kind of took over. Now Withers is building guys to fit his culture and his stuff. They are pretty, you know, bold, blunt comments just straight up about them. But that's who Withers is. He's straight up. He'll say it how it is, whether it's, you know, nice or not. But don't want to take too much away from those guys last year. You know, they still came in. They worked hard with the new coach. But I'm hoping, by the way, Withers talks, that something big can be coming up this upcoming few seasons.
Yeah, and he goes on to say later in the quote, I pulled up Bobcat report that has the full quote, and it says, no disrespect to last year's group. They didn't know us. They didn't know the expectations. We came in here swinging at them last year. We came here absolutely swinging at everybody in the athletic department because our standards were high. We just left a team that won a national championship at James Madison. We built that, and we've built expectations for that. So he's kind of just trying to build the same culture. And those guys last year that were Dennis Franchione's kids didn't really have that. And he went out and recruited guys from high schools that were winning programs. And I remember there was a story last season that in one of his first team meetings, Coach Withers asked the guys in the meeting room, how many of you guys come from a winning high school football program, and maybe only two or three of the players actually raised their hands. So he's trying to get guys that come from winning cultures and trying to instill that in Texas State. And, you know, it's a very blunt quote saying that he doesn't like the guys from last year. And, you know, he goes on to say no disrespect, but it's kind of hard to say that. But I don't think that he meant any disrespect, but he just says, you know, like, these guys didn't really know the culture that we wanted to bring in. So, you know, I don't think it was harsh, but I don't think it was too bad.
And earlier in that interview, he was talking about there's some freshman quarterbacks coming in, and they haven't joined the team yet, but they were there at the spring game kind of like watching and stuff, weren't really participating because they're still finishing up school and graduation. But he's talking about how excited he is for them to come in, because he says they're going to compete for the starting job, not just compete to be the second string quarterback, but they're going to compete with Damian Williams for the starting job. And he said, our first game is September 2nd. We won't announce who our starting quarterback is till September 1st. Do you think this is a smart idea just to have a quarterback battle versus giving Damian Williams kind of the green light to be the starter and letting this team be built around Damian Williams?
Yeah, it's all smokescreen. I think it's going to ultimately be Damian Williams, but Withers doesn't want him to get comfortable. He wants to keep him competing. He's talked about multiple times how Williams has a competitor spirit and he has that fire in him. When we talked to Coach Roth last week, that's what we heard. He's a big-time competitor. So he wants to just keep, you know, the fire lit under him and make him compete and keep improving every week and not going to give it to him easy.
Yeah, I think that's what it is, just kind of keeping Damian Williams competitive and, you know, kind of saying, hey, your job's not guaranteed. So, but, you know, I don't think that'll be a problem for Damian Williams. I think he's going to, you know, go into the season being as prepared as possible as much as he can. So, but I think it's a good idea to keep, you know, to tell those freshmen that they have a chance. That way they'll compete for that starting job too, and they'll prepare like a starter even if they're a backup, because, you know, you never know when you're going to go in. So it's always good to get those reps and go 100%. So I think, you know, I really do think that Damian Williams will be the day one starter, but I think it's a good idea to kind of just say that, hey, it's not guaranteed.
Well, now with the spring game under wraps, that kind of does it for the spring practices and stuff, but they'll come back in the summer and get ready for football season. But moving on to baseball season, Texas State, they won their weekend series 2-1 against Louisiana Monroe. As Texas State lost the first one 6-5, won the second game 9-5, and won the third game 7-4. And the first thing I want to talk about is in that third game, Nicholas Fraze pitched a great game. Do you think Fraze, did you kind of expect this out of a freshman, to just come in here and be this consistent?
Personally, I didn't, but the more I've seen him and over the last couple games, he's put together a lot of really good starts lately, and this one fits right into that. Going, you know, he went 7 innings deep, giving up just 3 hits, 3 runs. He did give up 4 walks, a little bit of a problem. He struck out 5. And really, these young starters for Texas State, they have been a bright spot. They haven't been, you know, tremendous, you know, like all ace pitchers, but they're all really young. I was doing the game Thursday when Connor Reich pitched, and Connor Reich had a nice game. He went into the ninth inning with the 4-1 lead. He ended up pitching an 8 1/3 innings, and he left the game with leaving 2 runners on base. In that game, the Texas State ultimately lost because the Warhawks scored 5 runs in the top of the ninth inning. But Connor Reich was not nearly perfect, but he had a tremendous game through 8 innings, almost went the complete route, and that's kind of been a bright spot that we haven't been talking about enough, is these young starting pitchers taking care, doing what they are supposed to do, and trying to get it to the bullpen to close it out.
Yeah, I think it's really awesome that these young guys are coming in and, you know, kind of pitching these gems and, you know, having good games, because it's definitely a big help, especially with the bullpen kind of not picking up the slack. So it's nice to see that these young guys can come in and have some consistency. Now, if the bullpen can kind of catch up and, you know, find their stride, this Bobcat baseball team will definitely be in good shape. And, but yeah, these starters are starting to look really good, and they're starting to come around. So it's going to be a lot of fun watching these guys continue to grow. And, you know, the next couple years should be really good for this pitching staff, I think.
And with that, we're already up against our 10-minute break. But before we go, if you like Bobcat Radio, if you like the other shows here on KTSW, then make sure to tune in to Shrimp and Grits. That is Thursday from 8 to 10 here on KTSW, as it is hosted by Brendan Charles. And it is a show with R&B and funk music. So if you want to tune in to that show, that show is at Thursdays from 8 to 10 here on KTSW 89.9.
Hey, do you understand what's going on in this movie?
Don't you? You did see the first movie, right?
This is a sequel?
They showed it at the San Marcos Cinema Club last week.
How was I supposed to know that?
Check out their Facebook page, S-N Cinema Club. They're always showing short films, local movies, and classics for the San Marcos cinephile.
Would you please be quiet? You do know this is a movie theater.
Well, excuse me for appreciating art.
A message from KTSW, the other side of radio.
It's time to grab that PB&J, potato chips, and celery sticks. Lunchbox. This isn't your ordinary lunch period. This is something revolutionary.
Lunchbox. KTSW presents you with our monthly on-campus concert series at the LBJ Amphitheater.
KTSW Lunchbox. KTSW's Lunchbox will blow your mind with two live performances and giveaways.
Lunchbox. That's right, giveaways. You may be in store to get a Lunchbox.
So come on down to LBJ every first Thursday of the month, and don't forget to bring your
Lunchbox.
This is David Mayo, and you're listening to Bobcat Radio on 89.9 KTSW.
And right now we are welcoming a special guest, Sean Pendergast. He is the host of the Triple Threat from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 610 in Houston. He is here to talk with us about Rockets, Texans, and the draft. Welcome, Sean. How was your Easter weekend?
I'm doing good. How are you guys doing?
I'm doing really swell. I'm from Houston. My co-hosts here are from Dallas. And so they're kind of just being bystanders to this NBA playoffs, but I'm doing really good this morning because the Rockets.
Well, but he can sit here and say, "Well, we have a quarterback at least." You know what I mean? Like, so it's proportional response.
Yeah, that is true. They can say that because that's obviously the big question that we're asking here today. And with that kind of question, if Savage is the starter for the Texans, do you think that the Texans are still the favorite to win the AFC South?
No, I don't. I think if Tom Savage is a starting quarterback, I think there's going to be a regression with this team, is my guess. Here's the thing about Tom Savage is that none of us really know. He hasn't played that much. Every time he gets on the field, he gets hurt. So, it's interesting to see people who are not in the building put so much faith in the guy because he hasn't yet. I mean, go look at his stats. He hasn't thrown a touchdown pass yet in the NFL. Like, he's played very little football. So I think just my hunch is that if Tom Savage is a quarterback, if he was good enough to be the starting quarterback for this team, he would have shown that by now 3 years in. So I think it's a leap of faith. It's attrition that's kind of gotten him here. And this is a team that won a lot of close games last year, and those are things that tend to kind of even out over the course of multiple seasons, meaning that I think there's going to be a little bit of a regression to the mean with this team. I know J.J. Watt's coming back, but I don't know how much better the defense can be. You know, the defense was pretty good last year already. So just to put it bluntly, I think if Tom Savage is the starting quarterback for this team, which it looks like he's going to be, I don't know that there's another solution out there right now. They're going to draft a quarterback, it looks like, but I don't think that guy's going to be ready to go day one. I think the team, there's a lot of banter on Twitter yesterday about the total for the Texans, I guess, right now, pre-draft, is 8 wins is what the posted total is in Vegas. I would go under that right now.
Hey, John, this is Brendan here. Moving on from the quarterback stuff, how much do you trust and feel about that receiving core other than DeAndre Hopkins? You haven't really seen much out of them. It's a bunch of young guys, like we said. We saw Will Fuller have his struggles. How do you feel about that receiving core and the tight ends?
I feel okay. I think it was a little bit of a miscalculation last year by this team. I'm not trying to play revisionist history because none of us were sitting here saying when they went with this group out of training camp that they were making a big mistake. But I think in retrospect, it was a mistake to go with such a young group at wide receiver last year. Brock was a huge issue for this team, obviously a quarterback, but I don't think it did him any favors that the rest of the receiving core outside of Hopkins, I'm putting the tight ends aside for a second, that the rest of the receivers had the same amount of experience in the NFL combined as DeAndre Hopkins himself had. You know, they had two rookies in Miller and Fuller, and they had Jalen Strong, who had only played 1 year, Keith Mumphrey, who had only played 1 year. You know, so when DeAndre Hopkins is not even at the end of his rookie deal, and he's your elder statesman, and this is an offense that Bill O'Brien professes to be really, really complex, that's kind of an issue. But, you know, O'Brien made that choice out of training camp. I feel like from a skill set standpoint, I feel like they've got a lot of good pieces to work with. They like their tight ends, obviously, a lot. Griffin and Fedorowicz both made some good strides last year, I think. I think the key, the X factor in the whole thing is going to be the development of Will Fuller. Because they, you know, that's a guy that they really liked. I mean, they moved up. It was only one spot, but they gave up something to go get him in the first round, which is something the Texans never do. And I think he showed very early on last season what he could do, and then he kind of tailed off as the season went on. But I think Will Fuller's going to be okay. And I think even though he's got the reputation as just a burner, I think he does have a toughness and an acumen for football where he's going to be able, and I think he showed a little of that last year, to be able to run some of the underneath stuff, some of the slip screens and things like that. He obviously needs to improve his hands. But overall, to answer your question, I feel pretty good. You know, as far as units on the offensive side of the ball go, I don't think the receiving core is a problem. They could use a veteran guy maybe, but overall I think the receiving core is pretty good.
Hey, Sean, Dominic here. I just wanted to ask you, you mentioned that the Texans were probably going to take a quarterback in the draft. Are you eyeing someone in this draft class that you think would be a good fit, or do you know if they have someone on their list that they want to take with their first pick?
Well, the news that came out last night, Patrick Mahomes is actually in town right now visiting with the team, and Deshaun Watson, if he's not in town, he will be in town at some point today. So that's always a pretty good sell. You know, they only get 30 of those visits where they can bring guys in. Those, to my knowledge, are the only two quarterbacks that they've brought in so far. So that could be an indication of guys that they like. You know, the word is that Bill O'Brien really likes Patrick Mahomes a lot out of Texas Tech. I'm more of a Deshaun Watson fan, only because I think that, and this is my, you know, I'm not a film watcher or anything like that. I don't break down, you know, a lot of film like a lot of the draft experts do. My feeling about the quarterback position is that the hardest thing to identify in a quarterback is how do they play when the bullets are flying. You know, you can have guys throwing against air and running 40s and doing all these things with no pads on all day long, and that's all well and good. But how do they do when you know, it's a clutch situation in a game or your team is behind or whatever? And there's nobody out there that has more film out there performing in big situations like that, performing well in big situations like that, than Deshaun Watson. So he's the one I would feel most comfortable with. And quite honestly, maybe outside of Mahomes, I think he's the one that would probably excite the fan base the most, just because I think the average Texan fan who maybe doesn't follow football and the draft and college football super, super close, they all know who Deshaun Watson is. So, and I know that I bring up Mahomes as maybe exciting the fan base more, it's just because of geography, because he, you know, he played here in Texas, but I like the fact that those are the two guys they're bringing in. Put it that way. Those are my two favorite guys.
Joined by Sean Pendergast from Sports Radio 610 in Houston. I read your article on the Houston Press this morning, and so I'm going to ask you. I know what your answer is. I read it, but our listeners probably haven't yet. Who do you think deserves the MVP?
I'm staunchly on the record that I'm a James Harden guy when it comes to MVP. And you know what? Maybe some of it is just that I watch every Rockets game and that I'm a Rocket fan. And I, you know, who knows? Subconsciously, maybe that's part of it. But I just, in something that is obviously, it's a very important award within the, you know, it's not, you know, nothing. Nobody's going to die if the wrong guy gets the MVP, but within the world we're sitting here talking about on this conversation, the NBA MVP is a really important thing in that sports world. And so when you have two candidates that have resumes that I think just from a raw statistical standpoint are extremely similar, and I say raw stats, just meaning points, rebounds, assists, I hate the fact that just because Russell Westbrook's rebound total happens to have two digits instead of one, like that's the game changer for everybody. Like, oh, he had 10 rebounds instead of 8, like Harden did, and people are like, well, he averaged a triple-double. Well, because he averaged double digits and two more rebounds a game than James Harden, that makes him that much more of a no-brainer, valuable, especially when you look at Harden's efficiency numbers. You know, his true shooting percentage, which factors in three-pointers and free throws, and it's a real measure of efficiency. Harden blows him away. Harden blows everybody away in that category amongst the MVP candidates. And I think if you just watch the two guys play, I know, you know, and we're saying this less than 24 hours removed from the Thunder, just looking like, you know, looking like the Nets last night. But I think if you watch over 82 games, watch those two guys kind of run their crew, if you will, you know, kind of run their offense. Harden just runs a much smoother ship than Russell Westbrook does. He just does. There's a smoothness and a flow to the Rockets offense that doesn't exist. And I think some of that does have to do with just the cerebral aspect of James' game, where he just knows where everybody is on the floor. He knows where to get guys the ball, and not just where to get guys the ball where they can get shots. I mean, nobody sets up more open shots for his teammates than James Harden. But I think mixed around right pass that sometimes leads to what I like to call hockey assist, you know, like the second assist. Like, Harden gets it to the right guy, knowing that that guy is going to get it to the next guy. It's just the Rockets are a much smoother team to watch, and I think that bears itself out in the one-loss record this year.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you. I've been on the James Harden side most of the year. And, you know, now people kind of fault him because all of a sudden he has a good system. I don't get it with the new coach. But staying with the Rockets, you know, the simple burning questions, do you think the Rockets could, you know, beat the Spurs and possibly the Warriors in these seven-game series, assuming they advance?
Yeah, could, yes, will. I don't think so. You know, the Spurs, I think, would be an interesting series. I'll say it, will be an interesting series when the two of them play. The Rockets played them pretty well in the regular season. I know they lost the season series 3-1, but you go back and watch all the games, they were pretty close. You know, the home game that they lost to the Spurs, one of the home games was, you know, the Rockets shot 6-for-38 from three-point range, and they were still, you know, leading by double digits with like 5 minutes to go and coughed up a lead. So they've played the Spurs, even though the matchup doesn't seem like they would play them pretty well, they've played them pretty well this year. So I think that'd be an epic series if they meet in the conference semifinals. The Warriors are just think the Warriors are a perfect kryptonite to what the Rockets like to do. They defend the three-point line really, really well. I think if you're looking for encouraging things from last night, you know, the Rockets were able to really, really thump a team, a playoff team, without getting real proficient three-point shooting. You know, you add up, you know, Harden and Anderson and Lee Williams and Eric Gordon and Ariza, I think combined they all went 5-for-24. So, that's the formula to beat the Warriors. Unfortunately, is they're going to have to make their threes, and the Warriors defend the 3-point line like fiends. And I just don't know that the Rockets, as they're comprised, have what it takes to beat the Warriors. But it'd be an incredibly intriguing series, only because it's almost like a fight fire with fire thing. Like, you could go really, really poorly, or it could get really, really intriguing. But I don't know that anybody has what it takes to beat the Warriors this year. They're the biggest favorite in Vegas right now in the modern history of the NBA playoffs to win the championship.
Hey, Sean, just wanted to ask you about Patrick Beverley. He had a really good game last night next to James Harden. Do you think that he'll be able to keep that up, you know, just kind of stepping up in playoff time? You think he'll be able to keep that going, or is it just kind of like a one-game performance?
No. Well, it's tough to ask Patrick Beverley to go 4-for-6 from three-point range every night. You know, those are things that tend to even out over the course of the series. You can count on Beverley bringing the effort and the energy will be there every single night, I'm sure of it, from Beverley. I don't know that you can count on him. You know, I just said all those guys went 5-for-24. The exception to that was Beverley, who went 4-for-6. So I don't know that you can count on that from him. It was nice to get that from him last night. He actually had some pretty good plays going to the hoop as well, going to the rim, attacking. So I think the constant with Patrick Beverley is going to be the defensive intensity, and that's what you're counting on from him, especially in this series, considering who he's checking on the other side. The likely MVP of the league. If you get a night like you did last night and then 21 points, 4-6-3, to me, that's kind of gravy. You know what I mean? Like, that's just extra. If he gives you the effort that he gave you last night, helping hold Westbrook to 6-for-23 from the field, then the job's done.
Patrick Beverley, he might not be the best player on the Rockets, but he's my favorite player. Is he not your favorite player?
It's funny you ask that. That's one of the topics I have on my rundown for the show today. I was thinking about that last night when I was watching the game, and I think if you ask longtime Rocket fans, and my Rocket fandom goes back to probably the early 90s when I moved here, but I'm obviously familiar with the history of the team being the age that I am, and I think, you know, if you ask not longtime Rocket fans, their favorite Rocket, probably the top three or four guys are going to be from those title teams because they won championships, you know, Hakeem and Clyde and Mario Elie and Robert Horry, Sam Cassell, guys like that, Kenny Smith. Since those title teams, and maybe even including the guys before the title teams, although they had some Hall of Famers with Calvin and Moses, but certainly since those title teams, I think Beverley's probably, and we're talking like 20 years now, Beverley's probably one of the three or four most popular Rockets over that period, I would think. You know, probably Yao and maybe Tracy, but I don't think you name, you know, James maybe. I don't think you get past four or five names before you name Patrick Beverley. I mean, you think about it, he's the longest tenured Rocket on this team right now. He's not the most experienced, you know, obviously guys have been playing in the league longer than him, but he's the longest tenured, even more than James, the longest tenured Rocket right now. And for a role player to survive the Daryl Morey era 5 years is like, you know, it's like surviving a role player surviving with another team for like 25 years, given how much Daryl likes to tinker with the roster and how necessary he sees it to tinker with the roster. And I think it really does, it speaks to his value to the team. I think it probably speaks a lot to his popularity in that locker room. But yeah, I think he's definitely one of my favorite players, to answer your original question. But I think you can make a case that he's probably one of the most popular players in the history of the team, and certainly in the recent history of the team, the last 15 or 20 years.
Well, thank you for taking time out to join us on Bobcat Radio. This is Sean Pendergast from Sports Radio 610. You can listen to him on the Triple Threat Monday through Friday from 2 to 6 in Houston. Big fan. I grew up, and especially my senior year of high school, would listen to Sports Radio all the time and then moved to San Marcos. So still listen to your show, and I just love it.
I appreciate that. Appreciate you guys having me on. You guys can have me on anytime. And, be safe in that college atmosphere, boys.
We will. And thank you.
Thanks for having me on.
Bye.
See ya.
It was good. He had a lot to say. He was very active. He knew everything, it seemed like, about Rockets and Texans.
Yeah, that's really all it is in Houston. I mean, especially in sports radio, they don't really talk about the Astros too much until September. And so I guarantee you, for them, it's about 90% Texans on sports radio, unless, like, the Rockets make the playoffs, and it's more Rock, or probably still more Texans. I bet you if you listen to today's show, it'll be about 60% Texans, 40% Rockets. And that's with the Rockets just playing game one of the playoffs. So they have to know their stuff because they talk from 2 to 6. We talk for 1 hour, one day a week. They talk for 4 hours, 5 days a week.
We got it easy, so.
but that was an interesting point. I think my favorite part of that whole thing was about Patrick Beverley maybe being, because I was in this year, like, is he your favorite player this year, but being one of the most Houston favorites overall, because he's definitely, I mean, if you look at Beverly's history, he was like a D-League player, played in other countries, and then worked his way up to the NBA. So he definitely has like a not a typical path to the NBA. But the way he plays, the way he defends Westbrook, the way he gives it 110%, I think is what makes him kind of the Rocket favorite. Even when I went a couple of weeks ago to the Rocket Spurs in San Antonio, the Rockets, early in the game, it was like 17, Harden hit a three, and the Rockets were up 17-7, and you just see Westbrook go, Beverly at the timeout, just go up to like the fans and just like put his like mouth in front of his finger and like bump his chest, just like stuff like that kind of gets you pumped up. That's what he is to this team. We only have about a minute left before we take a break. So I guess we'll just continue talking about a national sports. So the NBA this weekend, what was your favorite playoff game?
Real quick, I was going to go off of what he said about Beverly being maybe the most four or five recent. I would have put Shane Battier on that list also. That's all. I'm a big Shane Battier guy. I'm pretty sure Houston likes Shane Battier.
Yeah, I love Shane Battier. He was some player that he was a player that would always, also was kind of like Beverly, that would always give it his all, a leader of the team, definitely.
But going back to my favorite game from this weekend, it has to be Utah and the Clippers. Game went down to the last second. ISO Joe Johnson, buzzer beater. You know, he takes it one-on-one, gets to the rack, flips up a tough shot. And, you know, if you're a Clippers fan, you saw Chris Paul put in everything he could late in that game, hitting like 10 straight points, big time. But then they lose to the Rudy Gobert-less Utah Jazz.
Yeah, I think the Clippers are just one of those franchises that just have terrible luck in the postseason, you know. That seems to be the case with them.
And probably my favorite game was probably the Indiana-Cleveland game. But now we're already up against our break. Brendan, do you have our weather report?
Weather right now, it's going to be cloudy for most of the day. Cloudy right now. It's 73 degrees outside. With a high of 76, a low of 62. It feels about 10 mile per hour wind coming from the east. And 80% humidity. And that's probably going to look like most of the week. Not much. A little bit of chance of rain today and tonight.
And with that, we are going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back here on KTSW 89.9.
Support for KTSW is provided by Windmill Townhomes and Duplexes, located 3 blocks from the Texas State Campus on Windmill Drive, featuring 2-bedroom, 2.5-bath townhomes with internet and washer-dryer. More information on plans and prices at windmilltownhomes.com or 512-396-4181.
College is all about the late night study grind. We Bobcat Bobbies are here to make sure that that grind is safe. That's why if you ever need a dashing escort in uniform from any place on campus,
can I have a safety escort to my dorm?
I'll be right over.
Thank you.
We're there from 6:30 to 1 a.m. 7 days a week throughout the fall and spring semesters. Just call 512-245-7233 and you won't be alone in the dark. Whether you're a student, faculty, or staff member at Texas State, when you call 512-245-SAFE, you will always have the protection of the Bobcat Bobbies. A message from KTSW, the other side of radio.
Who are you snapping?
I'm checking out KTSW Snapchat. Don't you follow them?
No. Should I?
Don't you like live in-studio performances?
Yeah.
What about behind-the-scenes footage?
Yes.
And don't forget about all the events we need to keep up with.
You are so right. What's their username again?
It's KTSW_899.
Added. I am not going to miss out on the Lunchbox Concert Series this time.
Hey, this is Chris Nuttall.
And Robert Lowe.
And you listen to Bobcat Radio on
89.9 KTSW.
And welcome back to your Monday edition of Bobcat Radio here on April 16th. Joining us here after the 30-minute break, we have from Dallas, Kevin Hagelin. He is the K of the KNC Masterpiece, the number one night show in DFW on weeknights from 7 to 11 on 105 through the Fan. Mr. Hagelin, how are you doing today?
Man, after that introduction and plugging the fact that we're number one, I'm doing great. How are y'all?
We're doing pretty well around here in the San Marcos area. We just wanted to talk some Dallas sports with you after getting that Houston side. We got to get the Dallas side going down here.
Well, I mean, it's a little tough at the moment, right? So we start with the Rangers where the bullpen just looks like an absolute mess at the moment. I know they're really focused on Sam Dyson, but you look beyond that, Barnett has had problems, Housechild has had problems, obviously Kell is down in the minors, and I guess I'm not going to brag about that at the moment. That's not good, right?
No, that's kind of where I was going to go with my first question, obviously the Rangers bullpen, and would you feel better, how much better would you feel? Because I heard Jared Sadler talking about he thinks Kell will be back in the next week or two when he comes back and whenever Jake Diekman makes his return.
Yeah, so the thing about Diekman, though, is he's probably not going to come back until after the All-Star break. So you're talking about, I mean, he's just finishing up his surgery, so he probably won't be back until July. For Kella, who we got an opportunity to talk with at spring training, I'm very optimistic, as long as he's got his head straight, that could make a big difference. So, yeah, there's definitely hope on the horizon because you got Kella rolling back for the bullpen. Obviously, in the lineup, you'll have Beltre rolling back, but you're going to need Dyson to play a role somewhere in this bullpen. I don't know if you guys have thrown this out there, but I mean, just off of social media, I know people either want him released or sent to the minors, and that's just not going to happen. Like, you need Sam Dyson, Bannister even said that yesterday, to be a big part of this bullpen. I know it won't be as the closer anymore, but you need something out of him.
Hey, Kevin, this is Adam here. I just wanted to ask, I know this is early, second week of the season, but who do you think is going to take the AL West?
This is the spot where I can't say the Astros, right? Well, that would be terrible, wouldn't it? You all already got the Houston perspective. Did the Houston guy say the Astros are going to win?
We actually just talked about Texans and Rockets with him. We didn't even ask him this.
Okay, well, I'll assume that he said the Rangers were going to win. That's the assumption that I'm going to go with. Unfortunately, at the beginning of the year, I picked the Astros to win the division. Obviously, I'm not going to change my pick a week in because I had the Rangers taking the wild card. And the main reason for that is just because there's a lot of ifs that the Rangers are still depending on. I mean, you mentioned Diekman. If we can get him back to the top-notch level that he was at, Beltre is still going to come back, but all of a sudden that looks like kind of an if, hoping that you can keep him healthy since he already got hurt twice in spring training. And, you know, Andrew Cashner just pitched over the weekend and he looked pretty solid, but, you know, you're going to need something from him. We haven't seen Tyson Ross yet. You probably won't see him for another month. There's still too many ifs. for the Rangers to make me say that they're going to win the division. I think they'll take a wild card, but obviously a tough go to start the season, and as much as it pains my soul, I'll say the Astros to win the division.
Well, I'll take that. I'm the Houston guy on the show. My two co-hosts are Dallas fans, so they'll.
So you understand why it pains my soul, then, right?
Yeah, because it would pain my soul to say, well, last year I went to a Rangers Astros game in Arlington, and Astros didn't win, which they didn't win very much at all against the Rangers last year. So I'm hoping this year the Astros can get at least a little more wins up in Arlington.
Well, I'm obviously hoping that you're wrong, but clearly that's not what I picked, so we'll see.
Hey, Kevin, Dominic here. I just wanted to kind of go back to the conversation about the bullpen, and you know, what do you think Jeff Banister should do about the closer situation? Do you think he should throw Jose Leclerc in there? Because, I mean, he's looked really good when he's come in. He's kind of been the bright spot of that relief crew. So do you think he should give him a chance at going in there to close it out, or just keep Sam Dyson and kind of let him work out of that funk in the late innings?
There is absolutely no chance at this point that I'm going to let Sam Dyson work out his problems in high leverage situations. I think if you see Dyson now, you're probably going to see him, you know, like in the sixth inning, perhaps the seventh inning of a somewhat lopsided game. Like, I don't think you're going to see him in any more high leverage situations for a while. I'm intrigued by your idea of Leclerc, because you're right. He has looked really strong. His issue over the last year and a half or so has always been control, and that seems to be heading in the right direction. But I think it's most likely going to be Matt Bush. You know, he came back and pitched yesterday for the first time since his AC joint problems. He's the guy that a lot of fans have been clamoring to be the closer for a while. He has an electric fastball. I think it's most likely that you'll see Matt Bush. But it will be interesting if Leclerc gets more of those eighth inning high leverage situations, and I know he's not going to close, but let's throw out some love for Alex Claudio too, who seems to be the best pitcher we have, even though nobody ever talks about him.
Yeah, going back, Bush, he came back last night after missing about a week. He struck out the side in the eighth inning. A lot of promise from him. And as much as I could sit here and talk Ranger baseball all day, I guess we'll move over to the football side. The NFL draft is coming up next Thursday, April 27th. What/who do you want to see from the Dallas Cowboys and see what their draft plan, what they're going to do?
I mean, at this point, I honestly have to say I will be stunned if they don't take a defensive lineman or a defensive back. Like, honestly stunned. One of the names to keep an eye out on is Takaris McKinley, or as everyone calls him around here already, is Tack. I know that is a name that has gained a lot of traction. There's Derek Barnett from Tennessee, though it looks like he's trending higher in the first round. But, I mean, when you look at the moves that the Cowboys made in the offseason, it's abundantly clear that, you know, defensive lineman and defensive back is still where they're going to be looking. And so it's going to go beyond one name. You're going to see one, two, three, perhaps four taken combine at those two positions. So I think you're going to see a lot of new guys on the horizon. But I think Takaris McKinley is probably a pretty good name to keep your eye out on, and I know that's somebody that the Cowboys would be very excited if he rolled down to 28.
Kevin Hagelin from 105.3 The Fan is joining us right now. This is Adam here. I have to ask this question. I listen to like a lot of national radio shows, and
sure. They
tend to have this discussion lately about if Dak Prescott was to get hurt, do you see a possibility of Romo coming back and playing for the Cowboys? So I just wanted to get your perspective on that.
Oh, man. So I have heard, or we have been told, I guess, that I don't know if this is an agreement or some bizarre handshake deal or what the story is, but there is word that if the Cowboys got in an emergency situation that Romo would come back to save the day. And I've heard some people say, well, why in the world would Romo do that? And I think to myself, are you kidding me? Why in the world would he not do that? Like, isn't that the ultimate mic drop if Dak got hurt and Romo came in and saved the day and had playoff success? I mean, that's the ultimate I told you so to everyone and people like me who have ever doubted Tony Romo. Obviously, I'm hoping that that does not happen. In fact, over the weekend we had an event, Mudbug Bash, out in Arlington, and Dak Prescott was kind of the host of the festivities, and we got a chance to talk with him for several segments, and it was great. He was very relatable. He talked about his mom, talked about his love of crawfish, talked about his inability to navigate around the city like most of us. So he just seems like a really likable guy. He's already back at work already in April, so hopefully that won't come to pass. But I absolutely believe that if he got hurt and the Cowboys had to have someone, I totally could see Romo swooping in.
Hey, Kevin, just kind of wanted to shift gears towards the Mavs. You know, sure. Dirk Nowitzki said he's coming back, which is what every Dallas fan wanted to hear. And, you know, you kind of see Mark Cuban and Rick Carlisle kind of embracing the youth movement with Yogi Ferrell and bringing in Nerlens Noel and seeing kind of Dwight Powell get more minutes. What do you think the Mavs will look like next season after those guys got some game time experience?
You know, for the first time in, I don't know, a decade, Mavericks fans are going to be invested in the draft lottery and the NBA draft. Me and my co-host, Corey, we are very invested in this as well. Keep an eye out on the point guard position because you've got an option to pick up with Devin Harris, make about $4 million next year. But if that happens, he'll just be as a backup. If you want to know, and I know people are really high on Yogi Ferrell, I still think his long-term role with this team lies as more of like a Barea type who you can start if need be, but you'll probably see him more as, you know, high-octane off-the-bench guy. And so take a look at the drafts, whether it's, you know, I don't think they'll be in position unless they get lucky in the draft lottery and hop into the top three. I don't think you'll be talking about Fultz or Ball or anything like that, but De'Aaron Fox from Kentucky, and the guy that I'm really high on, Dennis Smith Jr. from North Carolina State, keep those two names in mind because I think the Mavericks will have a real shot at picking up one of those guys in the draft, depending on how the lottery goes. And I think there's an excellent possibility that you will see one of those guys really take hold of the point guard position as the season goes along. But I know they didn't make the playoffs, and obviously only 33 wins, they struggled, but you mentioned the youth movement, and I'm very encouraged by that. Also, keep an eye on Nerlens Noel, what kind of contract offer he gets since he's a restricted free agent.
And you're right on with the Yogi comparison. I've been saying that same thing for a while. I think he's going to be exactly just kind of another Barea-like player. But
sure.
I understand I was going through your, you know, stalking on you, getting your information, that you right. were part of College Radio and College 2 at UTD.
That is correct.
What was that like? Was it just kind of like this, an hour sports show, or what?
So I don't know if you guys have exactly gone through the battles that I have gone through. It sounds like you have pretty good support from your university, and I appreciate that. We had the support from our university, but not always the students. And so if you've ever heard our show now, it probably won't surprise you to hear this, but our battle was we got the radio station finally in the student union, but the student union had pool tables, ping pong, all that stuff, and people wanted to listen to music. Every other show on our station was nothing but music except for my show. And so when all of a sudden you just have a guy talking, I mean, some people liked it, but a lot of people, they just wanted to hear music, and there was a battle. We'd go round and around, and it's entirely possible that one time I might have called out the entire student union for complaining about sports talk radio being on instead of their music, and that led to a couple of problems. But y'all are in college, you know, sometimes, not a lot, but sometimes we don't make the wisest decisions in our lives. So eventually we got it all squared away, and here I am. So, you know, make better decisions than I did.
Yeah, I think we have decent support here for our radio staff, but that's going to kind of conclude our time here. We're going to thank you very much to Kevin Hagelin from 105.3 The Fan, the KNC Masterpiece. It's a good show. When I'm in town, I'm driving around that evening. I have it on most of the time, unless they get bumped by the Rangers, which is most of the time in the summer. But, yeah, you guys, it's a great show, and we really appreciate you coming on today.
No, absolutely. You can always check us out online. We got our podcast rolling. If you got iTunes, download. You can get all kinds of podcasts, KNC Masterpiece. And we'll be on tonight, 7 to 8:30. Thanks for having me, y'all.
Thank you, Mr. Hagelin. See you later.
So if you're a Houston fan, a Dallas fan, we got your sports talk professional perspective today on Bobcat Radio. And so what'd y'all think about anything Kevin said?
He's kind of been saying a lot of things I've been hearing. I've been thinking, like, Matt Bush possibly taking over the closer role. I was thinking that since last year. I didn't think Dyson would ever get cut or leave anywhere. I just thought he'd kind of move to a 6th, 7th middle reliever guy. The Yogi Ferrell thing, I've been saying that too after he came out hot, but they started Seth over him for a while. I was like, I think Yogi, they want him to be a backup for the future so they can still draft the top point guard right now. And pretty cool to hear his days of he ran the sports show by himself at UTD. That's got to be a tough one.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely liked what he said about Yogi Ferrell. I mean, I like him. He's definitely a spark plug. I think Dallas fans will always remember that game he had against Portland where he went off for 32 points. Or was it? It was against Portland, right? Yeah. So he's definitely, like, the fans have definitely embraced him. I definitely see him more of as a J.J. Barea guy, too. You know, the Matt Bush thing I kind of like. The one thing that concerns me is Matt Bush doesn't have a lot of off-speed, but I guess when you throw 99, it doesn't really matter. So, but, you know, I like the point that he brought up about Matt Bush, and hopefully Jose Leclerc can get more, like he said, high-leverage experience and kind of work his way into late-inning situations. But, yeah, you know, he had a lot of good stuff to say, as well as Sean from Houston. So we had a lot of good calls today.
Yeah, and I enjoyed that even though he's from Dallas, he was able to admit the Astros are going to, I mean, it's inevitable. They're going to win the AL West.
I wouldn't say
that. 2 weeks in.
Well, I mean, people were picking the Astros last year, and, you know, look what happened, so.
Yeah, that is true. I'm not. But
we're still missing a lot of pieces right now. Rangers are banged up start of the season.
Well, I have faith that my Astros will be AL West champions, and I guess both of y'all guys are on staff next semester, and so I guess we'll continue this conversation up until next October. But, continuing on to Texas State sports, we'll just move on to softball since we only have a few minutes here. They lost the series 2-1 versus Louisiana and lost the first two games by a lot, as they lost the first one 8-1 and then the second one 12-4. Louisiana was ranked number 17th in the country. Texas State was able to win the last game, was it 2-1? But kind of like this theme that we've been saying all season, that Texas State can only win if they shut them out. Pitching-wise, because their hitting is just not there. What do you think needs to change for their hitting just to be able to get going just a little bit? Because when they're playing good teams like this, it seems like they don't have a chance unless Rupp shuts them out.
They just got to try to get anything going, be aggressive on the base paths, get the ball into the field of play and try to make things happen. Because you look at their last five wins before the loss to Louisiana on Friday, they beat Texas 2-1. They won 5-0, 1-0, 3-0, 1-0. They shut out four straight opponents. Okay, you're going to win, obviously, if you shut out the opponents. But gave up one run in those five games, and only, on the flip side, only scored 12. And then this weekend against Louisiana, they only scored 7 runs total in those three games, while giving up 21. You have to put up more runs, more points, any sport, anywhere. This is not a good enough offense to get you through when your pitching is not on top of its game.
Yeah, and it seems like the offense really just has one consistent hitter, and that's Ariel Ortiz. You know, that's the name we've been hearing a lot. And I think that, you know, there has to be someone that kind of finds the hot bat, someone else that finds the hot bat, you know, and you know, can go on a bit of a hot streak. You know, I know we've heard Taylor Webb's name a lot. We've heard, you know, a lot of others. But I think the main thing is just the offense is kind of inconsistent, and you know, you can't always rely on the pitching, because there will be days where the pitching staff lets up 12 runs or 8 runs or, you know, 5, 6, or 7 runs. So it's definitely, you definitely need to find your stride on offense, and that's a lot tougher to do than, you know, from the pitching perspective, to find your stride, because, you know, when you're pitching, you can just keep the ball down in the zone, let your defense play behind you. But hitting, it's definitely a lot tougher.
And with that, we're already up against our last break. But before we go, if you like Bobcat Radio, if you like Shrimp and Grits, if you like the other shows here on KTSW, then make sure to check out The Other Side Drive Monday through Friday from 4 to 6 here on KTSW. It is the Drive Time Variety Show, and it is a show jam-packed with segments. They take song requests, and they have live interviews and in-studio performances. If you want to know more about The Other Side Drive, check out ktsw.txstate.edu, and that show is The Other Side Drive is on Monday through Friday from 4 to 6 here on KTSW. And with that, we'll be right back here in a moment.
You can't see it, but it's there. Someone you know isn't sure where their next meal will come from.
Hunger isn't always easy to see. For some, it's a constant struggle just to buy food, and hundreds of those families and children in need are right here in our community.
Since 1984, Hays County Food Bank has provided nutrition education and food assistance programs, and yet over 20% of children in Hays County are still food insecure.
There are always upcoming events right here in Hays County. To learn more on how to donate and end hunger, go online and visit haysfoodbank.org.
A message from KTSW, The Other Side of Radio.
Today I will make it law that everyone is to put used syringes in their pockets when going out in public.
I think a court is going to say that is unsafe, Mr. President.
The court doesn't matter. It's a very, very, very great order because I write the best executive orders. Believe me.
But the Constitution says otherwise.
Who told you this?
60 Second Civics, sir. It's a podcast aired weekdays at 5 p.m. on KTSW that talks about our government, the Constitution, and the history behind our nation.
Doesn't sound like fake news to me.
Hey, this is Daryl Morris, listening to Bobcat Radio, KTSW, San Marcos.
And with that, this show has flew by as we had two call-in interviews, one with Sean Pendergast from Sports Radio 610 in Houston, and one Kevin Hagland from 105.3 The Fan in Dallas. And with that, we'll continue on with national sports as we'll go to our favorite segment of the week, and that is...
Weekend loser.
I was thinking about what I wanted to pick for my weekend loser, and as a Houston fan, it was hard for me not to pick Russell Westbrook. And the reason why is it just being the first game against the guy that was kind of really going up for MVP against him. And the fact that the Toyota Center, they didn't put at the end of the game on the big screen Russell Westbrook stats versus James Harden stats. They compared Westbrook versus Beverly just because Beverly put better stats than him. So they were just trolling Westbrook in that. And so...
If you ain't first, you're last.
So I think Russell Westbrook's last right now in my MVP vote. He's last because he's not first. And so moving on, Brendan, who do you have for weekend loser?
I'm going to stay in the playoff basketball realm. And a little bit of a stretch here. Got to get an explanation behind it. I'm going with Paul George from the Indiana Pacers. So, Paul George, this weekend, the Pacers lost to the Cavs in Game 1 on Saturday by 1 point, 109 to 108. Paul George had a pretty decent game, 29 points, 9 of 19 shooting, 5 rebounds, 7 assists, plus or minus, minus 2, you know, it's the analytics, not a lot of people care. But at the end of the game, CJ Miles attempted the game-winning shot. After pump-faking his man off the ground, he got a decent look at a mid-range jumper for the win. Paul George had passed him that ball with about 5 seconds left because Paul George was double-teamed. LeBron James completely left his man and ran to double-team Paul George, saying, Paul George is not going to beat us. Paul George made the right play, gave it up. His teammate got a decent shot. Missed. After the game, Paul George said, hey, CJ, I need that ball in my hands. I need to take the last shot. You know, it's Paul George's team. He's the star. But Paul George goes out and says that. And in Paul George's career, he is 0 for 15 on potential game-winning shots in the last 20 seconds of a game. So what does he kind of stand to say that, you know, it's my, you know, what is, he just gets the seniority because he's the star, he's the all-star, but he's never hit a game winner in his life. He made the right basketball play, passing it. I'm not faulting CJ Miles at all.
I definitely like the confidence of Paul George, at least to say, you know, I want the game-winning shot, but, yeah, I mean, the stat kind of speaks for itself. I'm going to go shift gears to college football here. University of Arkansas, you know, dealing with a couple injuries. Linebacker Alexi Jean-Baptiste got injured in the their punter, Blake Johnson, also got injured, but he got injured outside of practice, unlike Jean-Baptiste. So Brett Bielema, the head coach, wasn't too happy about that. So what he did for Easter Sunday, he sent Blake Johnson home to his apartment to spend Easter alone. So I'm going to have to make Blake Johnson my weekend loser. That's kind of a sad little story there. Had to spend Easter alone in his apartment.
Yeah, it's kind of... Yeah, that's rough.
Yeah, I mean, Brett Bielema was not happy about that, you know, getting injured outside of practice, so.
And continuing with national sports, I kind of wanted to do this, even though we've already seen all the game ones, But because we're Monday only, last week we didn't really know where the NBA playoffs were going to look like completely. I kind of wanted to go around and just do predictions for each series, even though we're already one game in. And so I'll kind of start with the Warriors, Trailblazers, 4-0 Warriors.
Oh, yeah, I had Warriors. I might have gave Portland a game. They were competitive last night, Dame and TJ.
McCollum had like 42 points. Lillard had 34, and they still lost. I don't see how they'll win.
They're also missing the starting center.
Yeah, I mean, I'm gonna say either 4-0 or 4-1 Golden State. I mean, if Portland can win one game at home, then that's about all they're going to get.
And then moving on, Clippers and Jazz. That's a tough series. I think Clippers in seven, especially with the injury to Rudy G. I think the Clippers will actually win in seven.
I believe I also went Clippers in seven, mainly for the experience. Utah, none of those guys played in the playoffs. Other, what, Joe Johnson, a bunch of young guys, Boris Diaw, but I went and George Hill. Those are the only two I can think of, but I went to Clippers for the experience.
I will also take the Clippers, but I think I'll take them in six games instead of seven.
You're saying they'll win four out of the next five?
Yeah, four out of the next five.
Well, okay. And then the Rockets, Thunder. I'd say Rockets at five. I don't see it going more than five, but that's just me.
I said Rockets at five since last week.
Yeah, I mean, if last night was any indicator, you know, the Rockets should have no problem, so it's probably going to be in five games.
And then Spurs and four over the Grizzlies.
Spurs and four. I had them looking at my sheet here.
Yeah, Spurs and four.
I mean, I'd hope not. I would hope Memphis could kind of wear them down, but I don't see it happening. I'm quiet here because I'm thinking the Celtics and Bulls. I think the Bulls might actually can do the eight, upset the one. But I'm going to go and take Celtics and seven. And then I was going to do all my East picks right now, and then y'all can talk about the East. And then the next series is Hawks and Wizards. I got Wizards in six. And then the Cavs and the Pacers. Cavs in five. And then what's the other series? I'm forgetting.
Raptors-Bucks.
Oh, Raptors-Bucks, yeah. Bucks in seven. That'll be the upset. Bucks is the sixth seed. But the freak, he'll, I think he'll, I'm going to say it right now, and we can go back and find this in the archives, this audio next year. He's going to win the MVP next year in the NBA. Calling it now.
Do we have a hot take soundbite? No, we don't.
But you have a hot take soundbite.
I'll make one. But for my East picks, I'm going, I had the Celtics in five. I'll stick by them. I had the Wizards in seven. I really think the Bucks can beat the Raptors. That's my favorite series, this Raptors-Bucks series. I had the Raptors in seven, and I had Cleveland beating Indiana in six.
Yeah, let's see. I'm gonna go Celtics in six, and I'm gonna take the Wizards and give them five or six games for the Wizards.
The Bucks.
Bucks and Raptors. I think the Bucks can do it. You know, it's definitely. I think it'll be, seven games. So, and then Cavs Pacers. I'll take the Cavs.
Say Pacers.
Say Pacers.
Invite Andrew into the show.
if it is the Pacers, it'll have to be in seven games, I think.
But it won't be the Pacers.
It won't be the Pacers. But if it is, it'll be in seven. But I'll take the Cavs in. Five games, at the very worst, it'll take five games.
Last few times Pacers played the Cavs, including Saturday, lost by one. A couple weeks ago, they had the game when LeBron had the big triple double and Paul George went for 40.
Yeah,
Paul George shows up to big games, so it'll be interesting. I think he might be able to steal a game or two.
Yeah, and we have about 30 seconds left. But who do y'all think? Do you think Myles Garrett is going to get the first pick in the draft, or do you think there's any chance that another player gets picked first?
There's no chance, Adam. It's Myles Garrett.
It's Myles Garrett.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the kid I went to high school with, Myles Garrett.
You went to high school with Myles Garrett?
I went to high school with Myles Garrett. I'm surprised I haven't used that more on, like, dates and whatever, you know? I feel like I should be using that.
Well, that's if you find a girl that actually knows who Myles Garrett is.
And
that's
very true.
If you are a girl who knows who Myles Garrett is, maybe next semester or the semester after that, you can apply for KTSW Sports because, I don't know, if you know about Myles Garrett, you probably know a lot about sports because unless you watch A&M, on a weekly basis then.